Welcome to the Rent Estate Podcast, a conversation on how you can achieve retirement security, financial freedom, and the new American dream through rental property investments. And here's your host, Kevin Ortner, CEO of Renters Warehouse.
All right, welcome back to the Rent Estate Podcast, where we talk all things investment real estate, rental real estate, single family home investing. And the goal here is to hopefully help new investors learn a little bit how to take those first steps into maybe buying their first property, or more seasoned investors learn some tips and tricks from industry experts, professional property managers, or real estate investors. Today, really excited about the show. We have Sean Bloomquist with Pine Financial on. He's going to join us and talk about hard money lending, which I think sometimes gets a bad rap and can be used as a dirty word if you don't actually understand how you can leverage it. It's a great tool. So we're going to talk about hard money lending, and more importantly, how you can leverage hard money loans to actually buy rental properties with $0 down, which sounds very interesting. So I'm excited to talk about it. I've got some experience with that myself, so we'll talk about that as well. So we'll jump right into it. So thanks again for joining the podcast. And Sean, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Why don't you give the listeners and the viewers here just a quick background on yourself, maybe from a personal perspective, as well as what Pine Financial
is. Sure. So I'm Sean Bloomquist with Pine Financial Group, like Kevin said. I grew up in construction and bank financing and items like that, and I've done flips, owned rentals, new construction as well. So kind of seen the whole gamut of everything. Started working for Pine in 2012 here in Minnesota, and since 2012, we've done about 5 to 550 loans here. All rental properties or new construction or flips, things like that. Pine Financial itself is a company that was started in 2008 in Colorado, kind of at the bottom of the downturn.
Yeah.
Denver was one of the first markets to really take a dive, like Phoenix was as well. But Denver also was one of the first to come back. So the guy who started the company, Kevin Amelsch, saw an opportunity to fit a little niche in the market and finance investors that were looking to flip properties, do development, buy rentals, things like that. So since 2008 in Colorado and since 2012 here in Minnesota, and we also live in Wisconsin as well now.
Yeah, taking over the world, huh?
Yeah, trying to.
That's good. You know, it's so interesting, like that 2007, 8, 9 time period of a lot of the firms that we work with collectively were kind of born in that real estate downturn, right? We came around in 2007, kind of right before the downturn, but quickly the kind of pivoted our business. And one of the reasons we grew so quickly was we recognized how to be able to help people through that real estate crisis. You know, if you couldn't sell your home, lose too much money you did, or had to foreclose, let us help you out. We'll show you how to rent it, hang on to it, and create an investment out of it. You know, you guys saw the opportunity, or Kevin saw the opportunity of kind of what was coming with a rebound.
Yep.
We just bought last year a company called Own America, merged it with our business, and now have the Renters Warehouse Investor Marketplace, which is an online platform for buying and selling single family homes or portfolios of rental properties. And that company was founded in 2010 on the back of the real estate crisis. But also that whole, all of these stories of all three businesses were focused on optimism of what the real estate market was going to bring, right? There were still people at that time talking about, you know, it's never coming back, it's going to go down, all these kind of things. And I think all of us collectively, you know, that especially those who are successful today and have been kind of playing in this space now for over a decade, you know, like we knew it was going to come back, and we knew there were some niches opening up and some opportunities opening up. I frankly didn't realize how large it was going to be and how large that opportunity could be. But we've obviously had to pivot and evolve and change the business over time.
Sure.
But you know, the root cause of it is people being optimistic about where the market was going to go and seeing an opportunity to help people kind of recover from that. And I didn't realize that's when you guys were started as well. So that's interesting.
Well, I mean, like with you guys, it was landlord by default.
Right.
And that happened. I mean, I had that happen.
Right.
Our first home, we were moving, wanted to sell it. Market tanked. Okay, I'll hold on to it and ride it out.
Right.
You know, and with us, we could see that, or Kevin could see that, there was such a failure by conventional lending, which got us into that situation, that he knew that going forward, they were going to be just super tight with their their guidelines and everything else. So there was an opportunity to be a little more flexible and want to work with people to get things done. Plus you could get a, you could throw a dart and hit 10 properties for, you know, next to nothing back then. So,
I wish we still had that situation going on now sometimes, you know? Okay. That's great. So like I kind of teased in the opener here a little bit, and I'm obviously joking, but some people hear hard money lending. And it's a, it's like a, why would I do that? Or it's, it's the dirty word, right? It, predatory lenders or people taking advantage of people, because it is a different type of lending program. Interest rates a little bit higher, but for reasons, you know, but it creates a ton of flexibility. I think it's a very, very valuable tool for real estate investors. So those, you know, listening or watching that haven't heard of it before, have heard of it, but don't really understand it and are maybe a little skittish of why the heck I'm out here talking to a private money lender or a hard money lender. Let's talk about what hard money lending is.
So hard money lending, you're exactly right. It does get kind of a, not a bad rap, but people don't understand it and don't know what to think of it. So,
or how to leverage it.
Exactly. How to use it correctly. So I guess the first thing to say is, no, we're not the mob. We're not going to break legs to get our money back or anything like that. But what hard money has kind of evolved as well from what it started out as to what it is now. And what it started out as was right when things were starting to tank, hard money was used to kind of keep yourself from losing your house. So, you know, borrower was in foreclosure or close to foreclosure, maybe in the redemption period, needed to get their loan back up to current status and then refinance out into a better loan for them to keep their house. So a hard money lender would come in, do that, pay a higher interest rate, but they would get you back up to good standing and keep you moving forward. Well, then once everything tanked, hard money switched over to being more just investment property. So now, of all the hard money lenders I know, not a single one will touch anything with owner-occupied. Just because it's a different type of loan. It's a consumer loan versus a business purpose loan like ours is. So what we do is we lend based on the after-repaired valued or the leveraged value on the property. And typically a hard money, you'll see anywhere from 65 to 70% of loan to value on that after repaired value. So what you're doing is you're not going based on its current value, which is what most traditional lenders would do, where they want some skin in the game to make sure they're secure. We're going based on that end value on you putting some equity into the property by doing rehab to it and everything else. So by doing that, and going that 70% of the end value, we're in a comfortable position because the home will be worth more when they're done. And if for some reason they default and don't get it done, we've got the money there to fix it and keep it going. So the irony of it is people that use hard money, they're not broke and they don't have bad credit, because if you're broke and have bad credit, we're not going to lend to you either. You're a risk, right? So the people that are using it are trying to leverage their money to go farther. So instead of maybe getting one deal done with all cash, you could get 10 deals done and hardly use as much of your own cash. So because it's higher leverage, you pay a higher rate than you would with a bank. So you're going to see typical rates somewhere between 2 to 5 points. Points of origination is 1% of the loan value. So 2% to 5% of the loan value. And then you're going to see rates anywhere from 10 to 20%, maybe even higher. But that's all because it's such high leverage. So we're kind of the middle ground. Everybody starts at 4 points origination, 12.9% annual. Interest only payments, but only as long as you have the loan. So we're not requiring massive amounts down. It's just whatever we can't cover, you got to come up with the difference. You pay a high leveraged interest rate, but only as long as you need it. So if you can get in and out quickly, especially with rental property, you can do a quick rehab, get it refinanced out. The interest rate, even though it sounds scary, really isn't as big a deal as people think, because it's such short term.
And you can build it into your numbers, So you guys are 12.9%. I think you have, in full disclosure, I'm a borrower of Pine. I've done loans with Pine before, and I'm working my way down your frequent borrower program. So you do have a sliding scale as you have more repeat borrowers. I don't know if that's what you call them, coming through. Some of those fees go down.
The interest rate is always going to stay the same because that's all privately raised money. So we're not bank backed or anything like that. It's all investors like we all are that that want to invest their money in real estate but don't want to get their hands dirty,
right,
invest it with someone like us, and we lend it out, pay them a rate of return.
Right.
The sliding scale is on the points of origination.
Okay.
So everybody starts at 4, you can work your way down to 2, and then once you're at 2, you're there for good.
Right. So that's excellent. All right, great explanation. So a couple questions on that, though, is how do you guys determine after repair value or after rehab value? Mm-hmm. Let's start with that one.
Okay. So after repaired value, when a borrower is first finding a deal, they're going to work on what they think the after repaired value is with their realtor, or maybe mm-hmm. their realtor themselves, pull comps, do a CMA or comparative market analysis, come up with what they think a realistic number is for after repaired value based on other properties in the area that have the same finishes, same size. I mean, apples to apples is what they need to do. They get that done. They come to us when they're going to get the, when they have the property under contract, they come to us with the contract, the scope of work, what they're going to do to it, you know, finishes they're going to do, things like that. We actually have an appraisal done through a third party appraiser. They do the same thing that any other appraiser would do, but they know they're looking at that estimated end value.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll pull comps, make adjustments, everything else. They'll come back to us with that value, and hopefully it jives with what the borrower was thinking.
Right.
Right.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. If it doesn't, it changes our loan value.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were originally thinking the house was going to be worth $200,000 and our loan was going to be $140,000 and it comes back at $180,000, well, now our loan obviously is lower. It's
right.
down to $126,000.
Right.
But if it comes in higher, maybe they were a little conservative on their estimate, which would be great.
Right.
And it came in at 220. Well, now we're up to 154.
Right.
So it's going to slide just based on what that after repaired mm-hmm. value appraisal comes mm-hmm. in at. So
that makes sense. Thanks for that explanation there. So it's interesting that you point out your borrowers aren't broke or have bad credit. Because mm-hmm. I think that's where a lot of people think hard money is used, right?
Sure.
You can't get a traditional loan on real estate, and so you're going to go use hard money.
Yep.
And it's kind of right, because a lot of these deals, you could get a traditional loan for doing these properties, but to your point, it requires 20% down or 25% down, or in some cases 30% mm-hmm. down off the purchase price,
mm-hmm.
not the repair value,
yep.
After repair value. And that adds up quick, right? Same thing. If you're buying a $200,000 house and you need to put 20% down, which is on the low end mm-hmm. for these types of projects,
yep.
you're going to be putting down $40,000. Oh, and by the way, now you also have to front your rehab cost,
yeah,
whereas
exactly.
you can actually roll rehab cost and repair costs into loans with lenders like you.
Yeah, exactly. If they can find a deal that's strong enough where purchase, repairs, even the closing costs come in under that 70%,
mm-hmm.
we'll cover as much as we can.
Right.
So that you can potentially get into it for no money out of pocket up front.
Right.
It's getting harder to do just yeah. the way the market is, but we still fund deals that people are bringing less than $1,000.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty much no money down
yeah,
in my eyes.
Pretty much.
You know,
right?
so if you can buy a house and get the money to fix it and it only costs you $1,000 or less up front, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah. And I think that's the key to this whole thing, right? We're going to talk about no money down rentals here in a minute. But finding the right property is obviously one of the keys to making
yeah.
this be successful, right? Because you right. do a lot of loans, not just to long-term buy and hold investors, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. people who are flipping homes,
yep.
rehabbing homes, which is still very popular. Are you finding your clients having a harder and harder time finding the properties, or is that just the newbies that aren't sure where to look that have a hard time finding because you can't just find them on the MLS now?
I'd say it's a little of both. I'd say the new people getting into this are having a very hard time.
Yeah.
Because they're looking at them differently than the experienced borrowers.
Right.
And what I mean by that is that a new person may be looking at it as, okay, here's what it's listed for, which you and I know means nothing.
Right.
But they may be saying, okay, this is what they want for it. What's the minimum amount I can do to still get a good end market value?
Sure.
Where the experienced borrower is looking at it, okay, what can I push the end market value to?
Mm-hmm.
How much is it going to take to fix it to get it to there? How much loan can I get? And then figure out what they're going to offer.
Right.
So they're looking at them differently. You know, maybe adding a master suite in an attic or something mm-hmm. like that. Or maybe doing a bump out off the back or
right.
popping the top or something
right.
like that. And not pushing the value so much that the neighborhood won't support it.
Right.
But pushing it to see if they can get towards the top.
Yeah, you can find the properties that are probably the lowest listed or lowest valued home on the block, and you want to try and make it the highest valued home on the block. And
yep.
I imagine based on what you said, the newbies, the beginners, the inexperienced are looking at it like a flipping TV show.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I mean in more ways than one, right? Yeah. A flipping TV show that it's like a lipstick on a pig thing.
Exactly.
Right? Like, okay, I could buy this for $140, and if I put $10,000 into it, like, can I sell it for $180 or $190 or whatever? Where the experienced guy might say, okay, I could actually put an addition on the back, do this much larger renovation. Instead of spending $10,000, I can actually spend $80,000, but I could sell it for $400,000 because the neighborhood supports it versus trying to get $200,000 on the deal, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what people have to understand is those shows are great for entertainment, but their numbers just aren't realistic.
Okay. So every time I talk on the podcast about this or frankly to anybody about these things, I have to ask, because you obviously probably watch these once in a while, like I do. My wife loves them for the decorating.
Yep. Right?
Have you ever seen them lose money on any deal?
No, they never do.
Which is such BS.
No, they never do, and they never have holding costs or overages or any of that stuff.
Every once in a while, they go over budget, but for some odd reason, when they go to list it, the price they can list the home for is $100,000 more than they thought they're going to four weeks later. So I always laugh at that.
No, I think what people need to realize when they're first getting into this is a rehab on a home isn't just paint and carpet.
Right.
And that goes for rentals too.
Mm-hmm.
Paint and carpet, all you did was freshen it up.
Mm-hmm.
So an actual rehab that's going to add value to the property, it needs to have things corrected that are, you know, maybe not working, like mechanicals, electrical, things like that. But you also have to bring the home up to today's standards, if you want to say.
Yep.
You know, kitchens need to be better flowing. Bathrooms need to be bigger, better, nicer, things like that. So you need to add value that's tangible, not just, you know, freshening it up.
Right.
So.
Right. For sure. Okay. Let's switch gears to rental properties.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys do a lot of seminars here in Minnesota, and I'm sure in Denver and everywhere you are. And different topic every month. But one of them that you've been doing a lot lately, and I've come and contributed to some of these, is the zero down rental. So how do you buy a rental property that you're going to hold long term with $0 down, which sounds too good to be true.
It does.
And I think it's challenging in today's market, but they're still out there. I've done some of these myself. What do you mean by zero down rentals? How do you get something like that done?
Sure. So the zero down, it is possible. Yes, it's getting harder.
Mm-hmm.
And what we mean by that is if you can find a property that you can buy it, fix it, and close it for under that 70% threshold, you don't have to bring any money to closing.
Right.
And that is a little more possible with a rental than it would be for a flip,
mm-hmm.
just because your rehab is going to be most likely lower than it would be for a flip.
Right.
Instead of putting in $80,000, maybe you're only putting $20,000 or $30,000
into
it. So if you can buy it, fix it, close it for under the 70%, you can buy it for no money down. Now, obviously, when you're in it, you've got interest payments you got to make.
Right.
So there is some money tied up into it. But with a rental rehab, I mean, we've had them done in as fast where they buy it, fix it, refinance out in as fast as 45 days.
Wow.
Well, if you're only paying a month and a half of interest.
It's nothing.
I mean, a couple $1,000s, maybe most.
Right.
And then when you go to refinance out, the refinance lender, if you go to the right type of lender, meaning direct to Fannie Mae, things like that, where they don't have any overlays that, you know, maybe you go to a bank and they say, well, you have to have 2 years of rental history, mm-hmm. or you have to hold the property for a year or 2 years.
Yep.
Well, Fannie Mae doesn't have those restrictions. Those are just the bank's restrictions on top of Fannie Mae's. So Fannie Mae says you could refinance it tomorrow.
Right.
If the numbers made sense.
Right.
Right. And you don't have to hold it for a certain amount of time or anything like that. So if they go to a direct Fannie Mae lender, depending on the number of properties they have, they most likely can get up to 75% of the end value.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that covers our 70%, and then they've got another 5% or so to cover the closing costs on the back end.
Right.
So it is possible to buy it for no money down up front and no money down
at the refinance,
and then you've just got the holding costs in between.
So let's break that down a little bit, but I do want to mention that. So this is such a cool, if you really truly understand this and you find the right partners, this is such a cool thing. And when I say no money down, and we joke, like, I mean, if you have a couple $1,000s in property, that's basically no money down.
Sure.
Right. And frankly, I'm happy if it works out that I have $10,000 in the property, because if I just went and bought the property conventionally, already fixed up, already ready to go, I got to put 20 to 25 to 30% down, depending on who you are and where you're getting your loans from. So my wife and I are doing some investing in real estate. I've invested for a long time, but my wife and I just started buying again. And I talked to her about this, you know, buy, rehab, refinance, rent strategy.
Sure.
And how, geez, it'd be great if we could have such little money down, the, you know, the $100,000 we want to invest in real estate, instead of buying two houses, we could buy 10.
Yeah.
She's very conservative. So of course she did a lot of research to see if I was making this up. Not that I've been in the industry for 20 years or anything like that, but, you know, making this up or what. She's like, oh my gosh, this is like a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it is a real strategy. And the first one we did, like we ended up a little over budget. She was like super bummed about it. I'm like, that's the beauty of it being a rental and not a flip. Mm-hmm. Because in the flip, if you go over budget, you are really cutting into your profit margin.
Sure.
You might be really tight. It's causing you problems. Like at the end of the day, if we're into this property for any less than $50,000,
we won. Yeah.
Right. And we were going to be into it for like 10, and now we're going to be into it for like 18.
Yeah.
So I bought a, you know, $250,000 house, and instead of putting down $50,000, I put in 18. Mm-hmm. Like that's still a win, right? It may not be $0 down, but it's called leveraging, right? Leveraging your money and your personal resources. So that's the philosophy, right? It may be $0 down, or it just may frankly be a whole lot less money into the property. And if the rents can support your final conventional loan payment, you know, a lot of these things you can still cash flow. Mm-hmm. And so that's the philosophy here, right? So the first step is obviously identifying the right house.
Yep.
I'm going to make an assumption, but I assume you guys don't really help people with that. You're just kind of there after they find their house, right? I'm sure people ask you this, though, a lot at your seminars.
Well, the main question is, where do I find deals?
Right. Where do I find deals?
But
after they find a deal with their realtor, however they're finding deals, they bring in their contractors, they look at it, figure out how much it's going to cost, and they have their plan. Then they come to you.
Yep.
And they get their hard money loan.
Yep.
If it's under that 70% after repaired value, they could get 100% finance essentially from you guys.
Correct.
I think the tricky part is the devil in the details now, which is when you go to try and refinance out of that loan, what do we have to be looking out for? What are the pitfalls people have run into? And I think it's very important to have the right partners lined up before you get into this, right?
Correct. So when you're going to, if this is your strategy, we have lenders that we work with who we know they can perform and mm-hmm. come through, because mm-hmm. there are many lenders that have told us over the years, yes, we can do the refinance out, no problem. And then when the time comes, they don't come through. Well, that's bad for us and bad for the borrower as well,
right?
Because now what do they do?
Yep.
Right. So we want to make sure you're working with someone that we've actually used before, who understands what we're trying to do, and who isn't going to have more hoops for you to jump through than you need to.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want you to do is, if this is your strategy, before you actually find the deal, I want you to apply with us prior, so we can get you pre-approved, so you can go out and make offers on the properties.
Right.
But then I also want you to be pre-approved with the refinance lender before you actually find the property.
Right.
Because if you can't get refinanced, you're not flipping the properties.
Right.
Right. You're not holding them.
Right.
So we want to know that, yes, you're in a position where, as long as you stick to the numbers that you originally came up with, you should have no problem getting refinanced out.
Right.
Now, the pitfalls or downfalls to that are, between the time you get the property loan with us and you refinance, if you do something drastic to your financial picture.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, if you decide to go out and buy another house for yourself, or you're starting your business and you're going to go out and buy a $60,000 work truck.
Get a bunch of loans.
Like that. Right. Yeah. If you screw up your debt to income ratio, you may now have a challenge to refinance.
Right.
So as long as you stick to the plan and don't do any drastic right or left turns, you should have no issue whatsoever. Mm-hmm. The other little hang up that there could be, and we have seen it before, but it isn't as big of a deal as you'd think, is we get the appraisal done prior for the estimated end value. When they go to refinance, they're going to get an appraisal done as well.
Right. Doesn't matter.
For the final value.
Right.
Right. Well, it could be two different appraisers.
Sure.
And you could give them the same exact data and they could come up with two different values.
Right.
Right. So that is a potential risk that you could have human error involved, if you want to call it that,
mm-hmm.
and they could come up with different values. Now, that has happened a couple times in the 100-plus times we've done it here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And the times it's happened, we've been able to get the appraisal adjusted because there was something that they missed,
right,
or, you know, just used bad comps or something like that.
Right.
So
I think everything you just point to goes to one of the key philosophies I preach all the time on the podcast, and also just as I'm giving advice to people investing in real estate, which is to make sure you build the right team.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And building the right team is so important. Whether you're implementing this strategy or not, when you're investing in real estate, have trusted partners that know what they're talking about, that can actually perform, that you can rely on, that are going to also help you solve problems, mm-hmm. is so big. And I see this in every step of the way, whether it's a realtor who you're working with who really doesn't understand investment property. Mm-hmm. They specialize in first-time home buyers. They're not bad realtors, they're not bad people. I'm not knocking them, but they just don't know investment real estate. Yeah. And so sometimes they can steer you down the wrong road or not know the answers to the questions you have and can't help you solve problems. Title companies can make things challenging if they don't know what's going on. Not having the right hard money lender mm-hmm. can lead you down a bad path. And I think in this situation, though, not having the right conventional mortgage broker or mortgage lender lined up that understands this process mm-hmm. can just really throw things.
Oh, yeah. It can destroy your entire strategy.
Right.
And you're exactly right with the team. I mean, there are a million realtors out there, but not all of them work with investment properties right. or understand it.
Right.
Like you said, they're not bad realtors. They just don't get it. It's just not their niche.
Right.
Right. Same with lenders. I mean, you could have hard money lenders that they'll do fix and flip properties all day long, but they don't write the loan in a way for it to be easy to refinance out.
Sure.
So you need to make sure that whoever you're working with has got a track record mm-hmm. doing whatever you're thinking of doing mm-hmm. and that they understand the game, essentially.
Right.
I mean, it's if all the pieces are working in unison and they understand what's trying to happen,
right.
it can be a very seamless process.
For sure.
But if somebody doesn't understand it completely, it can be a very challenging process.
Yeah, and I just think building the right team means the team also just needs to work together, mm-hmm. which means your realtor needs to be willing and able and understand how to talk to your hard money lender. Your hard money lender needs to know how to talk to your conventional lender. Your conventional lender might need to talk to your realtor. And there's certain people who are happy to get involved in that. And then there's some people who are like, hey, that's not my thing. It's yep. not my gig. I don't need to talk to your guy. Right.
Yep.
But hey, I actually need you to talk to my guy to get this straightened
yeah,
out.
Exactly.
Right. Otherwise I'm in trouble. And so building that team is so important. Vetting who you're working with is super important. Getting the referrals, getting the references, using people we recommend on the podcast or through Renter's Warehouse. Is just so important because I just hate to see deals go bad or strategies go bad because we've got the wrong key player, mm-hmm. you know, put in there. And so that last piece is interesting. And in fact, a similar thing happened to me recently. I'll admit my mistakes sometimes. And that's, I recently bought a rental property under this strategy mm-hmm. of putting very little money down ultimately as yep. I refinance out of the property. I had to move really quick on it. So I just used cash. Bought it cash. I have some good local banking relationships that will generally do a pretty easy refinance for me. Regional banks are fantastic if you can build those relationships. Otherwise, having the right lender that can go direct to Fannie Freddie is obviously the key. So I bought it and then actually called Kim Burke.
Okay.
And I said, hey, I got my local bank's estimates on the refinance, which was great. There are a few things that might, you know, cause me to have a little bit more money stuck into it
sure.
than what I wanted to. So I'll call Kim. Kim is someone we work with a lot here at Renter's Warehouse, and I know at Pine that mm-hmm. does this takeout financing. And I'm like, hey, I just did this deal, and what do you? And she's like, well, if you bought it cash, I really can't help you very much because different refinance rules apply to cash
yep.
versus buying it cash with hard money, which is actually a loan,
yep.
right? I did not know that.
Yeah, and that's the thing is the guidelines are constantly changing
right.
for Fannie, Freddie, all those guys.
Right.
I mean, daily they're changing. Mm-hmm. So as far as I know, the last time I heard was if you bought it cash, you had to hold it for at least, I think it was 6 months mm-hmm. before you could do a cash out refinance. Mm-hmm. If you're using someone like us where it's a loan, you can refinance it out.
Yeah, and you're paying off a loan.
And you're paying off the
loan. There's actually ways you can structure it, I learned from Kim, where it's legal, it's legit, but it takes some attorneys to structure it where you can lend yourself the money from an entity that's designed to lend money to other things. And like some of the lenders will be able to do that. But basically, it's just a lot easier to go to a hard money lender, borrow the money, get the project done, and refinance it out. My local bank's going to take care of me, so that's
sure,
good.
Sure.
But it was funny. I'm like, oh, I'll just go talk to Kim about this. You know, hey, Kim, about this property, here's what I did. She's like, yeah, that's not smart. So I did that. So again, make sure you're consulting with your team on what's going on. And this was a result of me acting fast, trying to get things done quickly and get a deal, which I got a deal. And it's all going to work out fine in the end. But it was definitely a learning lesson for me of, oh, I didn't realize that, you know, because I can back up all the expense I put on the property.
Sure.
And some of my cash is coming from lines of credit I have at other places, right? So it's kind of a loan, but not really, because it's truly funded from the outside looking like it's cash. And I, you know, I've got the documentation of how much the contractors charged me. And so like, hey, here's the packet of what I have into the home. It's like, yeah, it's still cash. So we can't, you know, we can get you like this really small, you know, loan to value ratio, mm-hmm. or you got to wait 6 months or a year or whatever the heck the thing was. Like she's like, just call Sean next time.
Well, and in that scenario, so the reason someone like him or any other lender can refinance us out immediately is because even though it works like cash, it isn't considered cash.
Right.
So when they make the offer on the property, they're marking it as financing, but they're marking it as other and writing in hard money.
Right.
So because it's considered financing, no problem refinancing out. Right. And that's what I meant earlier by when I'm saying if the hard money lender doesn't structure it correctly,
right.
It could be tough to get refinanced out. In the scenario you had where there are times you've got to move immediately to get a property.
Right.
If you were to buy it for cash, just to tie it up,
yeah.
You could still come back to us and we could refinance you back out with the loan.
We might need to talk later.
Yeah. Pull your cash back out, have the loan with us, and then refinance out. So that's always an option as well if it was something where you had to really get into it quickly.
Right.
Because we can close quick, but if we're doing an appraisal, it's probably going to be 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know? If someone had some money that they wanted to tie up into it, had no problem tying up into it, they just needed help, we could do a 90% of purchase price loan.
Mm.
And with that, we're not doing an appraisal. We're just doing an in-house valuation. Mm-hmm. And we can close that in 7 to 10 days.
Mm.
So they're going to have 10% into it. They're going to have the closing costs. They're going to have the rehab out of pocket.
Right.
But they're still getting the deal done because we're helping them with the other big chunk that
That's interesting. So you guys can do that too. So all this, as I'm listening to it, you know, as a viewer or listener, you're like, God, this sounds crazy. Like refinance from this to one loan to another loan. Like this sounds shady. Mm-hmm. I want to point out this is all actually super legit.
Yep.
It's all following those federal guidelines.
Yep.
And that's where the hiccups come. And that's where it keeps everybody in check are those federal guidelines. You just have to work with people who understand them. And remember at the end of the day, through this whole process we're talking about, you end up with a property with 25 to possibly 30% equity.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely.
Right? And so it's not like this property's over leveraged. It's just been done creatively with mm-hmm. a strategy that works. And frankly, you just generated wealth for yourself, your family, and your legacy out of not quite thin air, but through planning, thoughtful planning, strategy, and execution here, and some sweat equity in many cases.
Yep.
Of I bought the property for this. I put this amount into it. I can refinance out. I got a 75 to 80% conventional loan after this is all said and done. And I've got 20 to 25% equity mm-hmm. in this property, which is the exact same thing you would have done if you would have brought your cash to a property that already had the work done. This is just a little more complicated. It's not super complex, but it's harder than just making an offer on a property. You got to find the property, build the team, and execute on a strategy. But by doing that, you just generated net worth.
Oh, definitely.
Out of over a couple months.
Yeah. And that's the key thing to remember is this loan with us or this strategy doesn't work for a turnkey property.
Right.
Because a turnkey is already at its end value.
Right.
Right. So in that case, you are going to be bringing 20 to 30% down for a turnkey rental. But if you, like you were saying, if you use this strategy and you execute it correctly, you can build a portfolio extremely fast compared to your standard way of doing it because you're not having to save up that big chunk all the time.
Right.
And the other nice part is when you go to do that refinance, the refinance lender is going to be able to look at your retirement and consider that towards the reserves.
Right.
So your retirement's not going to be getting touched for every deal. It's just going to be sitting there. So they can use that as as your reserves to get each deal done.
Right.
We had a client that we did a lot of business with. It was a husband and wife. They both had W-2 income, which is like, you know, the light shining down on you when you go to refinance.
Yes.
But they both had W-2 income. They both had good retirement accounts. And they said, we want to buy duplexes and bigger. It's a duplex, triplex, quad, and that's all we want to buy, and we want to ramp this thing up. So they had their team in place. They were using us. They were using Kim at Leader One. And in 18 months, they bought 16 units.
Holy cow.
And each one had maybe $5,000 to $10,000 into it.
Wow.
So that's just crazy. you know, when you're talking duplexes, they were probably cash flowing somewhere around 1,000 for each duplex. And if you've got 16 units total, you're talking 8 to 12,000 in cash flow in 18 months.
Wow.
So it does work as long as you stick to the plan and you know, use the right team and things like that.
Yeah.
You can ramp it up big time to get these things done.
That's awesome. I think that's a great story to end today's podcast on for sure. If people wanted to reach out to Pine Financial, to reach out to you, learn more about what you guys do, how do they get in touch?
It's www.pinefinancialgroup.com. If people wanted to reach out to me directly, it's just my first name, Sean, S as in Sam, E as in Edward, A as in Apple, N as in Nancy, @pinefinancialgroup.com. I'm our local rep here in Minnesota, so I'd be happy to talk to them or walk them through any situations they have.
Great. We'll put your contact info, company info, in the show notes.
Sounds good.
So people can get a hold of you. Thanks so much for coming on. This
Thank
was
you.
Super, super interesting. And thank you guys for listening to the podcast, supporting the podcast, watching the podcast. Always great to have you back. If you liked it, please leave some comments in the comment section, star it, share it with a friend, download it, subscribe, all that good stuff. And we love your feedback. So if you have questions for the show, make sure you reach out to us at renterswarehouse.com. And until next time, happy investing.
You've been listening to the Rent Estate Podcast with your host, Kevin Ortner. If you enjoyed today's show, head over to rentestate.com for a free rental property analysis and learn how you can list, invest, and rent all under one roof.